Well, yes, I'm Dr. Ray Boland. I am a research and writing associate with Probe Ministries. I currently serve as vice president of Vision Outreach, which means that whenever we're going to talk about what Probe does, I get to do it. That's about all that means. I did serve as president for about 8 years. All of my education is in the biological sciences, so I have a bachelor's degree in zoology from the University of Illinois, and a master's degree in population biology from University of North Texas, which was North Texas State University when I was there, and then also a PhD in cell biology from University of Texas here at Dallas. And I finished that in 91, and so I do a number of other things, but biology and scientific topics, I'm the science guy at Probe. There is nobody else who will touch those topics except me. So, concerning the environment, even when I was in late high school, I began to develop an environmental awareness. I grew up in the city of Chicago, went to high school in the city of Chicago, and but my favorite place always to go in the summer was to the zoo. And for some reason, I developed this environmental awareness and pursued that some at the University of Illinois. My major was zoology, as I mentioned, but also my sub-level was animal ecology. And so I've been concerned and interested in this area for quite some time. And so I've developed, what we're going to talk about here is this as a Christian view of the environment. And over the years, I've been able to kind of fuse those two together in a way that... And that's just been moved over. I'm going to trip over it.
I'll move it. That's it.
Much better you do that than me. Okay, let's see. Oh, there we go. Now, these next few things come from a book that was written quite a few years ago. And it basically was talking about seven degradations we can see in the environment. This is by a Christian biologist from the University of Wisconsin. And one of the points he made, the first one was lands are being converted, habitats destroyed at an increasing rate. What that means is that the more we need to spread out urban-wise, we take over the nearby farmlands. And the farmlands then need to encroach further into wilderness areas to continue to grow the food that's needed. So that's really what that's talking about. There's just an encroachment on the natural environment, the undisturbed environment, as human population grows. This is from National Geographic, July 2001. In 1950, 70 million Americans lived in urban areas covering 13,000 square miles. By 1990, the urban population had doubled, and the land area covered has quintupled. So as people spread in urban areas, they take up more and more space. Metropolitan Atlanta covers an area larger than the state of Delaware. That was 20 years ago. It's probably even worse. Sprawl covers 1.2 million acres of farmland every year. And I can only imagine that continues to expand. What happens with suburbs is that people spread out more. The population density of a suburb is much less than it is inside the city. So you spread out into more and more land for those people. And since 1969, the number of cars and trucks has increased twice as fast as the population. You need places to put all those vehicles. Okay. When I was growing up as a kid in the 50s and 60s, our family had two cars, one from my dad, one from my mom, and that was it. All the way through college, my family had two vehicles, never anything additional for kids. Number two, some estimate that three species become extinct every day. Now, that's just an estimate, because we really don't know exactly how many species of animals and plants we have. We've named somewhere around 8 to 9 million or so different species. But we do know in certain parts of the rainforest in particular, there are some areas that we just haven't investigated very well. There are still some parts, by the way, of the Congo that human beings have never seen. Still, today. Land degraded, overused, fertilizers, herbicides, pesticides. I'm not a big negative on these things, herbicides, pesticides, fertilizers. However, we can and we do overuse them. One of the consequences of creating crop plants that are resistant to herbicides is so that you can spray your crops with more and more herbicide. Because it's not going to harm the plants. You can put as much of it as you want. It's not going to harm the plants. So again, there's this tendency just to overuse more than what we need. Hazardous waste, chemicals, finding their way into the environment. It's only been within, I think, in the last 10 years, about 10, 15 years ago, that the U.S. government finally found a place where we could remove radioactive waste to, Yucca Mountain in California. It's buried deep within the mountain. But all that stuff was being stored on site for a very long time. So we have lots of former chemical dumps that still have to be cleaned up, things that are called Superfund sites. And some of those chemicals, they're in these steel containers, but steel rusts and degrades. And so some of those things do leak into the environment. Pollution. Ceasing to be a local problem, becoming a global problem. We'll talk a little bit more about that towards the end concerning global warming. Atmosphere's ability to regulate itself is being compromised, and this was specifically referring to this the events surrounding global warming. We'll talk a bit more detailed about that. And last, human cultures that know how to live in harmony with nature are rapidly disappearing. In the Amazon in particular, the farmers who are living on the edge of the Amazon will clear a portion of Amazon rainforest and plant their crops. But tropical rainforest soils are very thin, and they wash away pretty quick, and then the land is useless. What do? Cut down more forest. Expose more land. Grow crops from more layers, and so they keep encroaching on the Amazon year by year. And what happens there, the people who live there and are able to use various plants and animals for medicines, for healing purposes, all sorts of things, their knowledge of that disappears as they do, as their land disappears. So I come up with this question, and I'm just going to throw it out to here since we can't have some audience participation. Why should we care about the environment? Just a few thoughts that come into your head. Just throw some things out.
We haven't found another planet yet.
They haven't found one yet, which means
what we got. This is it.
This is it. Okay.
I'm thinking of Adam and Eve when God told them to watch over, you know, that they're supposed to tend the garden and watch over the animals and everything. So kind of our responsibility given to us by God.
Okay, so we have a responsibility. Okay. Any other thoughts come to mind?
Well, nowadays in particular, there's so much coming from all around us that is saying things about the environment that we need to know how to respond to that.
Okay.
As Christians, mm-hmm. or as, you know, just people who are thinkers, you know, the idea that the environment is going to, you know, we might not be here in 20 years, those kinds of
mm-hmm.
things.
So, okay, yeah.
Well, it's where we live, so.
We do live here, yes.
Yeah, so we should take care of.
But most of us don't interact with the environment all that much, right? Most of us, right?
In the city, right.
Uh-huh. Do you really need the environment?
Yes.
To live your life?
Does a TV count as environment?
No, that's technology.
I watched the Nature Channel.
We're not talking about the environment of your home.
Okay, well, let's just wanted you to think about that a little bit. This is from a book that I obtained quite a few years ago about a worldview concerning Africa. And this is a lecturer in an agricultural college in Kenya. Said, I'm worried about, the ecological deterioration of our environment. The overgrazing, this is in Kenya, and soil erosion are becoming worse. Trees are cut down for firewood, but nobody plants anything to replace the trees. Would I be able to find guidelines in the Bible to motivate people towards conservation? Most people around here are Christians. I do know that the Lord gave the command in Genesis that we have to be stewards of His creation in every sense of the word. I am, however, not merely looking for scattered text, but I'm looking for a broad perspective with which I can inspire my students. So it's not just here. This is a worldwide concern, even among Christians. And some of the past have actually blamed us, that we are the primary problem of why the environment is being ravaged, if you will. That's a word that gets used frequently. And why would they think that? Well, Genesis says humans are to have rule and dominion over the earth. People have seen that as the ability, the reason that, an excuse, if you will, to exploit. Some interpret that this as a license to exploit. The solution is not new technology, they say, but a new way of thinking about the environment. These are people who are not Christians. We're the problem. So you can't turn to biblical texts about this. We have to have a new way of thinking about the environment. So let's look at a couple of other worldviews first and see if they can offer us any answers. What about the worldview of naturalism? When I say that, anybody know what I mean?
Can I take a guess?
Yeah.
Just let things happen as they
happen. Sort of. Well, naturalism is the worldview in which there is no God, there are no gods or goddesses or anything like that. There's no spiritual realm whatsoever. All there is the physical world. That's all that exists. The physical universe, that's all that exists. And in this worldview, the ultimate value is human survival. I teach a number of classes that can go back to this, where the only purpose in human life or any biological life is simply to survive and reproduce. That is all that matters. So the ultimate value is human survival. Man cannot survive, they tell us, without a healthy planet. So if the human species is really going to continue, then we need to have a healthy planet for that. We must preserve our planet to rescue our future. You hear frequently about saving this or that environmental area for our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren. What are we going to say to them if this is no longer here when they come of age? That's really coming from this point of view. Ultimately, however, this view is selfish. Why? Because it's all about us. It's about our survival. It's about our reproduction. What really happens to the other organisms is really only of consequence because it matters to us. Our survival depends on it. Let's go back one last time here to naturalism. Okay. Let's just say you're well into the future, and any Star Trek fans here?
Watch some.
Okay. Those of you who might be at least a little familiar with it, when you needed a meal on the Starship Enterprise, were there cooks?
No.
What'd you do?
You took the little pill and, you know, watered it, and it turned into this, you know, big plate.
Uh-huh. Sort of. They had a machine that would simply rearrange molecules into food. When you needed to take a vacation, did you visit a new planet and just hang out?
Holodeck.
Yes.
Holodeck.
Uh-huh.
That's good.
It was a virtual reality vacation. You would sit in the chair, they put these goggles on you, and you would transmit yourself to wherever you wanted to go, and you could enjoy nature without being in nature.
You can do that today.
So they say. So they tell us. So you don't need nature for food. You don't need nature for visiting the outdoors. What do you need nature for anymore? What value does it still have in that context? So maybe not going to help us that much. So we'll turn now to pantheism. Maybe that has some answers. Well, here, what they'll tell you is, since all is one, therefore all is God. This is the overall worldview of pantheism, many different types of it. Nature is respected because it is part of the essence of God. So if you're going to treat yourself well as a part of God, you should treat all of nature well, because it also is as much a part of God, small g, not a personal God, okay, as you are. We must act to save our planet because it has equal value with human beings. It's the same. Got some problems here, as you might expect. Pantheism will degrade man and ultimately degrade nature. Why is that? The individual particular, what that means is the individual things themselves do not have any real value. The physical world, in most pantheistic perspectives, is an illusion. It doesn't really exist. So why should you act in any self-sacrificing way to preserve something that doesn't actually exist? The idea of most pantheistic perspectives is to merge yourself with the one, in which you completely disappear, and you simply, like a drop of water falling into an endless sea, you're just what's a drop of water become when it falls in? Nothing. It's just more water. Okay? So that's not going to help us here. And so there really is no reason for any kind of environmental action within this particular worldview either. So no answer also for both the benevolent and destructive forces of nature. If all is one and all is God, well, it's all the same. No real difference. Lynn White wrote an article in 1967 in the journal Science. He said, "What we do about ecology depends on our ideas of the man-nature relationship. More science and technology are not going to get us out of the present ecological crisis until we find a new religion or rethink our old one." Now, obviously, I've highlighted rethink our old one, and that's what we're going to do. The answer lies in a true Christian environmental ethic. All of this is coming from Francis Schaeffer's book, Pollution and the Death of Man, A Christian View of Ecology. So this entire outline is really coming from Francis Schaeffer. Most of you in here probably never heard of the man.
Oh, yeah.
We watched some of them
2 months ago. We had a...
Oh, you did?
Schaeffer.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I stand corrected. All right. First of all, God is creator. All of nature is equal in its origin. It all has come from Him. God speaks, and everything around us comes into existence. Nature has value. Why? Because God created it. It cannot lose that value. It's not a value that's comparative to other things. It has value because God created it. So there is a separation between God and all that exists. Okay? While man is a creature, he is created in God's image. We are the only creature made in God's image. Genesis 1, 26 and 27, Psalm 139. You can look those passages up later. So man is separated from creation, yet related to it. So man is in God's image, and there's a separation between God, man, and the rest of nature. But man is also a part of nature. So we have, if you will, dual citizenship. In God's image, but also part of the created order. Everybody loves the yeah, that's the response I like to get. Animals glorify the Creator as they are, not as we romanticize them to be. I have an 11-year-old golden retriever who is daddy's dog. And he may be 95 pounds, but he still thinks he's a puppy and a lap dog. And so most mornings when I'm drinking my coffee, he comes up next to my recliner and he puts his two paws on the footrest. All right, come on. He comes up in my lap. He's a part of the family, but he's not a human being. Okay? He's a dog. And I've had two Brevis dogs, and when both of those were had to be put down, one because of he was had to take him to the vet in great pain. He was all sorts of fluid in his lungs, couldn't breathe, and had to put him down. The other one because of cancer. I resisted the pleas to have my two dogs buried in pet cemeteries. No, it's a dog. Both my dogs were cremated. They're not human beings. I'm not going to set aside a spot where I'm supposed to go visit them. You know? That doesn't make any sense. Man has been given dominion over nature, but what does that really mean? First of all, we are not sovereign. God is sovereign over nature. We were told to cultivate the garden so we may use it, nature, but only as God intends it to be used. And Matthew 25 is about the parable of the talents. And to one he gave five, one he gave, I think, two, the other he gave one. And the one with five turned that into ten, the one to two made it into four, and they were highly recommended and praised, but the one who was just given one was afraid. He just went away and he buried it, right? And then when the master returned, he dug it up and returned it to him. Kind of a dirty coin, dirty talent by that point, right? And if you think about, just in our own imagination, what you think the earth was like when God first created everything, and man was a part of it before the fall had occurred, what would you think is the condition of the earth today compared to what it was then? Is that what we want to return to Christ when he returns? We're not even given a talent back. It's less than a talent, okay? So if that servant was punished, so will we.
They were able to live 900 years, so I imagine it was much better.
Dominion simply means stewardship. We are stewards of the earth and of creation, not sovereign over it. The source of ecological crisis lies in man's fallen nature. Yes, we are created in God's image, but we have an environmental crisis because of our fallen nature, because of our sin, not because of anything else. We have used our dominion wrongly. I'm not against pumping for oil. I'm not against eating meat, okay? Man has exploited the created things. But this is also where I'll tell you that, for me personally, I choose not to eat veal. The reason I don't eat veal, it's calf meat, okay? And the way they have to treat a calf in order for its meat to be tender is it's put into a narrow chute that it never leaves, it's provided food and water underneath its snout, and that's how they live their life. Calves were not designed to live that way. So I'm sorry, I don't eat veal. Make your own choice, but that's just my personal practice.
Where do you have the question?
Oh.
Are you talking about American cows from the
African? American calves. Yeah, I can imagine that. Well, in order to provide veal for restaurants, calves must be produced en masse. Okay, And so that's how they create calves with tender meat. So man's fallen nature has expressed itself in the use of time and money. Both of those two things. Schaefer refers to this as man's uncontrolled greed and haste. In other words, what we can do, we will do. If we can create tender calf meat by raising calves that way, then that's what we're going to do. It's going to be cheaper. It's going to be quicker. So the solution is the witness of the Christian community in the proper relationship between God, man, and nature. Witness of the Christian community. Have you ever heard much of a witness from the Christian community about the environment? It's there. It's hard to come by. Rightful dominion. The leaders of the environmental movement should be those who claim to be rightly related to the Creator. That should be us.
Yeah.
If we're saying we are rightly related to the Creator of the universe, of the earth, and all of nature, then if there ought to be any kind of environmental movement, we ought to be at the center of it. We should treat nature as having inherent value as God's creation. And that value will never change. Exercise dominion without being destructive. That is the challenge. Without being destructive. This will require both a human and an economic cost. Sometimes this is going to be more expensive. Israel was to care for the land. Leviticus 25 talks in great detail about that. Israel is to treat domesticated animals properly and wildlife with respect. Deuteronomy 22:6 refers to, if you're walking down the road and you see a nest, a bird nest with eggs in it, you may take the eggs, but not the mother for food. That's a sound ecological principle. Why? If the mother's eggs are gone, what does she do? She lays more eggs. If you take both, you've cut off the cycle. Okay. Judgment on those who misuse the land. Isaiah 5, 8 through 10. You might want to jot that down and take a look at that sometime. I see you have Isaiah 5, 8 through 10. You want to read that for us? Anybody who gets there?
Woe to those who join house to house, who add field to field until there is no more room, and you are made to dwell alone in the midst of the land. The Lord of hosts has sworn in my hearing, surely many houses shall be desolate, large and beautiful houses without inhabitants. For 10 acres of vineyard shall yield but one bath, and a homer of seed shall yield but an ephah.
House on house. You know any places where that happens? You're familiar with any?
House on house,
yeah.
Apartments.
What about field on field?
Sounds like apartments.
Well, even in the suburbs, house upon house. Maybe a little more property in between. Not that much, okay? When you ever hear in the Old Testament, or even when Jesus says, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees," right? That's not a good address. You don't want to have that woe coming before you, okay? The Lord cares for His creation. Psalm 104. Psalm 104 is a creation psalm. And each of the 6 days is referenced, not necessarily in order, but light and darkness, the expanse, the waters above, waters below, the surface of the earth, day 3 with the plants and the forming of land, day 4, the sun, moon, and the stars. And by the way, if you ever notice in when it talks about day 4, when God created the stars, He creates the sun to guide the day and the night, to guide the moon, to guide the night. And you made the stars also. All those billions of billions of trillions of afterthought. You made those also. Now, the first Adam brought a curse on his relationship with God, other people, and nature. Everything that was easy in the garden, because he was told to care for it, so we can assume that Adam became a bit of a horticulturalist, right? Maybe making flower beds and raising crops. Who knows what he did? But everything came really easy. But now, thorns and thistles, by the sweat of your brow, all this is going to have to happen. The second Adam redeems all of the effects of the curse. Again, 1 Corinthians 15 and Romans 8. He will redeem all the effects of the curse, not just the curse of sin upon us. We should not be the destroyers. Now, trees should not be cut down without cause. Usually if we have an area, a field, or a pasture that's now going to be turned into a housing development, what is the first thing they usually do? Cut everything down and start over again, and they build their homes, and then they plant these ugly looking tiny trees, these saplings, that take about 15, 20 years to grow into mature trees when they had dozens of them around already. But why they do that? Well, that greed and haste. Saves time, saves money. You can build around a lot of those trees, but each of those homes is going to be a lot more expensive than it would have been otherwise, and it's going to take you a lot longer. So the greed, the money, the haste, time-wise. We can rid our house of ants, but we should respect them where God created them to be. I had a pesticide company come to my door several months ago and was advertising to rid our lawn of insects. So, oh, no, you don't want to do that. I like my insects. The lawn needs those, and If I have fire ants, yeah, I'll get rid of those. Anything that's harmful or destructive, I will remove those. But no, I don't need. And the guy just kind of looked at me like, "What planet are you from?" You know. Okay. Yeah, I do not step on ants on the sidewalk. Little boys do that. Okay. Little boys need to be restrained sometimes. No looking at don't. Okay. And this will restore our sense of humanity and beauty. And yeah, I've got several colonies of ants in my grass, and they make up little mounds here and there every once in a while. It's very close to the ground. It doesn't cause any disturbance. I don't go walking around my grass barefoot. It's just not my thing. I don't do that. I'm always out there with shoes when I'm cutting the grass, whatever. But even so, earthworms and ants are tunneling beneath the top of the soil, and they are aerating the soil for you. A neighbor across the street had to pay a company to come to aerate his lawn. I just don't get rid of the bugs. They aerate the lawn for me. The church has failed in its mission as steward of the earth. Have you ever heard of a church-sponsored environmental group? I never have. I've tried to start one a few times. Didn't meet with much success. basically unheard of. In some ways, I tell young people particularly, we are losing an evangelistic opportunity. So many of our young people have received an environmental education through their public schooling. And they have a certain level of environmental awareness and environmental concern. But yet they see nothing about that within the context of the church they attend. And so they will go elsewhere for that. But again, losing an evangelistic opportunity. Now, prophet's not wrong. I have nothing against prophet. But sometimes as I mentioned earlier, with housing developments, we might need to accept some limits to that. We don't like to hear about that. You own a company, you don't want to have limits to that. So, if we can treat with integrity the things God has made, change will come. So, before I move on to global warming, another one of my animations that doesn't go forever, but you know. Questions, comments, concerns? Everything I said made absolute sense to everyone.
I was hearing about the whole thing with bees and how there was a bee shortage and how that could just change everything regarding our environment.
Yeah, there has been a problem with bee populations for some time as very important pollinators. They are critical to a lot of our agriculture, not just flowers. We're not entirely sure what the cause of that is. It's not necessarily the earth is warming. It's not a global warming sort of thing. They would just migrate north if that were the case. It just wouldn't matter that much. We had some friends that we just visited last night who have their own, they live way out in Lucas, okay, and a very rural area, and they have their own beehives. And they had five, but they lost two with the big freeze we had. And they didn't survive that. But that was just a local event, nothing national about that. So, yeah, if we lose the bees completely, that would be a dramatic blow to agriculture. Yeah, absolutely. So perhaps the more local beekeepers we have, they're going to bring us some of their honey tomorrow at church. Yes? What's the difference?
What's the difference? Naturalism and atheism?
Well, most naturalists would call themselves atheists, although that title doesn't really matter that much to them. Rather, a naturalist simply sees themselves, what you could call them, as a materialist. All that exists is what is material. There is no spiritual of any kind. So that would end up meaning they're an atheist, most likely, but they don't really concern themselves with that. They think about it more scientifically than they would philosophically. Anybody else?
Heard this somewhere, and I'm not sure. In the lines.
Maybe you should go ask somewhere.
In the lines of Cain and the lines of Seth. In the lines of Cain, they tended to start working with metals and things, and then the line of Seth, there was more farmers and I'm not sure. I mean, how accurate that is, but. And then also with the cities, obviously God told us to fill the earth, and then Nimrod built the city. So, you know, I don't know, I just thought of those things, but like, I kind of wonder if we're kind of meant to be more farmers and not cities and technology, and of course this is the world we live in now. But
yeah, I would think that'd be fairly accurate. Being able to be close to the earth and using farming to produce your own food, but eventually if you're a really good farmer, you produce more than you need. And therefore that allows the opportunity for people to do other things. For instance, modern science didn't arise in other cultures primarily because in the West we became very efficient at raising our own food, whether it's crops or livestock, and people could afford to have time to just think about things. And so that's how modern science got its start. In the West, no place else was able to do that. There were some worldview issues as well, but to some degree, early on, I think that may have had a point, but eventually, as the population continues to increase, even in those early times. Why Nimrod made a city, it doesn't really explain.
Right.
Who knows? I didn't use it long for a while, so it disappeared on me. Yeah, it did. There we go. Oh, and you got the Earth rotating back. Briefly. Briefly. Ready to move on? Global warming? Now, this topic is controversial, and some of you might not agree with my overall perspective here, but I'm willing to answer questions and dialogue about this, but let me climate change. So the first question to ask is the Earth warming? And the simple answer is yes, it is warming. The major question involved, however, is how fast and what is the cause of that warming? But the Earth has warmed and cooled for a very long time. We can take that into human history and we can chart warming and cooling by looking at Arctic and Antarctic ice cores. We can gauge temperature by the types of oxygen isotopes and their prevalence. Okay, there are ways to estimate what the temperature was when those layers of ice cores were laid down. Since 1900, around the turn of the 20th century, the Earth has warmed by about a half a degree or 1 degree, half degree Celsius, 1 degree Fahrenheit. That now depends on what temperature graph you're looking at. It can either be a degree Celsius or it can be a degree and a half Celsius and therefore 2 degrees Fahrenheit. And we'll take a look at that a little bit later. An increase in the greenhouse gases, specifically carbon dioxide, has been ruled the culprit. Carbon dioxide has been increasing since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. And around the turn of the century, 1900, there was about 280 parts per million of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Right now, that's risen to about 420 parts per million. Seems like a dramatic increase. Now, this graph was presented in 1990 by a climatologist named Michael Mann, and Michael Mann et al., 1999. And what this seems to show is beginning in about the year 1000, there's been a slow, gradual decrease in the Earth's temperature, and then suddenly, right around just before 1900, there's a sharp increase. This is referred to as the hockey stick graph. Can you tell why? The long handle, and then the sharp rise is the blade of the hockey stick. Okay. Now, this graph is now known. This was presented to Congress, a hearing at Congress in about the year 2000, and Al Gore was a part of that meeting and helped get it set up, and they scheduled the meeting for what is ordinarily the hottest day of the year in Washington, D.C., and the night before, they turned off the AC. So everybody in the hearing was plenty warm, but it had nothing to do with global warming. Okay. A little bit of manipulation there. We now know this graph was falsified. I'll show you some information on the next slide that will give you a truer picture of how the Earth's temperature has changed since 1000 and before. We know, we're fairly certain about this now, because early on Michael Mann was asked to produce the data he used to create this graph. He always has refused. it's proprietary. I can't share my data, all that sort of thing. And then a journalist in Canada who was critical of Michael Mann and this graft, started getting on Michael Mann's nerves, and Michael Mann went into Canadian court to sue for defamation of character and damages. But guess what the judge asked for? He asked for the data behind the graph. He refused. His suit got tossed. Okay? So even to support his own lawsuit, he would not produce his data. Anyway, this is a more realistic last 1,000 years. We did have something called the medieval warm period. That was when the Vikings colonized Greenland. No one can have a year-long colony on Greenland today without very expensive heating costs. Okay, they were able to raise crops. They had we've unearthed little pens for livestock, and it was warmer than it currently is today. So you notice about beginning in 1500 and a little beyond that, something called the Little Ice Age. The medieval warm period descended into a period, a fairly cool period of time, and that began warming up. In a sense, what you could say is that we are still recovering from this Little Ice Age. During the medieval warm period also, you could grow vineyards for grapes for wine in southern England. You still can't grow grapes for wine in southern England. It's not warm enough. Okay, but you could during the medieval warm period. During the Little Ice Age, the Thames River would freeze over every winter and you could ice skate. You ain't going to do that today. It's not that cold anymore. It's still warming, okay, from that Little Ice Age. Now, this comes from the title of the book that I got this from. This is from the International Panel for Climate Change, IPCC, okay, 1995, from the UN. And so this is their graph. And they even recognized the medieval warm period. There was also a Roman warm period. All of the Roman ports that they constructed are now under 3 feet of water because sea rise has been continuing since the last ice age, and it continues to rise. So when they simply tell you that sea levels are rising, that's no big deal. What they have to demonstrate, and they haven't, is that the rate of sea rise is increasing. And so far, there's no data to indicate that the rate of sea level rise is increasing.
Do we know if there's 500-year cycles of going up and going down? Or?
Well, actually, the title of the book I got this from was called Runaway Global Warming Every 1,500 Years. There does seem to be about a 1,500-year cycle of warming than cooling. Now, the warming recently has seemed to have been a bit more rapid than you would ordinarily tend to see. But it is still cooler than it was during the medieval warm period and much cooler than it was during the Minoan warm period, which goes back to about 2000 BC. So the Earth technically is warming from the Little Ice Age. How much of that is caused by carbon dioxide? We really don't know. Can anybody name one of the other greenhouse gases that supposedly is increasing?
Methane.
Methane. What's the major source of methane?
Beef.
Cows. That's why you're seeing all this increase in plant-based meat. Now, technically, they can't call it meat because it's not. So this, you've seen commercials maybe later for incognito.
That's pretty clever.
Incognito, yes. That's mainly referring to a product that looks and tastes like chicken. I'm just going to call it a product. I'm not going to call it meat. Oh, got on me again.
Oh,
oh, I probably could do that. Okay. So can carbon dioxide be the culprit? Now, as I mentioned, carbon dioxide levels have risen from 315 parts per million in 1958 to over 400 parts per million in 2015. By 2021, that's about 420, 430. Now, you have to think about that. You have to always pay attention to the units here. Parts, PPM means parts per million. So 400 parts per million is just 4 parts per 10,000 air molecules. Carbon dioxide is a trace gas in our atmosphere. 78% of our atmosphere is nitrogen, 21% is oxygen, and most of the remaining 1% is argon, a completely neutral gas. Water is also a greenhouse gas. Greenhouse simply meaning that it takes in sunlight and it emits radiation back out in the form of heat. So that's why when you get into your car on a hot summer day, been sitting out in the sun, the light gets into through the windows, but the heat, that when it strikes the interior, it radiates out heat, and that heat does not make it through the glass as easily as the sunlight did. So that's why your car warms up. That's called, so your car is a greenhouse in the summer, any time of year. So vegetation, however, we've seen has increased 6% globally. That's a good thing. Some of these ecosystems are recovering. We have increased crop yields year after year after year because of extra carbon dioxide. Greenhouses don't just trap sunlight and make it warmer. They also will pump carbon dioxide into the greenhouse because carbon dioxide is plant food. It's fertilizer for plants. So labeling, as the Obama administration did, labeling carbon dioxide as a pollutant is biologically unsound. It simply is not true. As I said, fertilizer, not a pollutant. Droughts, famines, floods, increased carbon dioxide will increase food production, which it has. Some weather patterns will change, but not because of increased carbon dioxide. We think that some of the warming, at least, is likely due to sunspot cycle. About every 11 years, it kind of goes up, goes down. And about every 10 or 11 of those 11-year cycles, there's a big rise and then a big decrease. The sun emits more heat the more sunspots there are. And within the last few years, we reached the end of a severe rise in sunspot activity over the previous 11 years and over the last years, even before that. So we're still waiting to see what will happen with that. Now, when I said this, warming has stagnated. This was back in 2015, and I'm going to show you a graph here. Now I got this afternoon. This goes to 2021. But if you look here, this is satellite temperatures. Temperature of the atmosphere, not of the ground level. This is different. So this only started in 1979. So this only goes back 42 years. Now in 2015, so that would have been right here, we had gone. Since 1998, there had basically been no global warming. It was referred to as the pause. Okay. Since then, we have had some warming, but please notice that with the satellite data, the increase, the top part of the graph over there on the far right, your right, goes up to about 0.4 degrees above the running average. And it started about 0.4 degrees Celsius below that. So it's risen by 0.8 degrees Celsius in those 41 years overall. Ground-based temperatures will show double that increase. But ground-based temperatures readings can be biased because for the most part, initially they were located in cities. Cities are heat islands. you ever watch the evening news and the weather report comes on, always watch the temperatures surrounding Dallas particular and the surrounding areas. Dallas temperature is always warmer than everything else around it to the north and far to the south. Why? Concrete, asphalt. Absorbs heat and radiates it all through the day, all through the night. So satellite temperatures of the atmosphere do not have that problem. Okay. So some have put together some mathematical adjustments for those heat island effects. Some will claim they adjust too much. Some will say they don't adjust enough. So whose adjustments are you trusting? You can't know. I can't know. But the satellite temperatures are far more reliable. And that does not show the dramatic temperature increase, at least since 1979. We do know that from about 1940 to about 1975, there was absolutely no global warming, even with the ground-based temperature stations. So there was a slight rise from about 1880 to about 1940. And then following World War II, things just hit a very long, almost a 30-plus year pause, and then started again right around here. So you're seeing most of the rise since 1979 in this data. And this, again, kind of looking at the same thing, just a little bit differently. That one's too small. Really make much out of that. More intense hurricanes. Well, the last two hurricane seasons predicted to be more intense than 2005 of Katrina and Rita fame both fizzled. They have been predicting more active hurricane seasons ever since 2005, and it's never happened. We had a more active hurricane season last year. Many tropical storms, many more names were used. I'm not so sure sometimes what they use to assign names might not have changed recently. I wouldn't put it past them to make it seem as if we had so many more named storms. But we didn't have that many more hurricanes. And we're now, hurricane season technically begins June 1st and it ends by the end of October. So we're about 2 months into the 5 month hurricane season and there just hasn't been a whole lot of activity. We've had tropical storms, but not much in the way of actual hurricanes. So once again, it looks like the prediction is going to fall short.
A few years ago, wasn't there some record-breaking hurricanes that hit Puerto Rico and what year was that? 19?
As long as we have weather, there's always going to be records broken. The question you have to try to ascertain is, had there been several records broken in this particular year? And usually that's not the case. A lot has been made of these massive heat waves in the West this year. I've seen news reports saying that level of heat in Washington State, Oregon, Northern California is impossible without climate change. I don't believe it. I just don't believe it. They are constantly working to put fear in people's minds. That is a big aspect of what's happening here. Some of the UN people in the mid-2000s were already saying that this is not just about temperatures rising and trying to bring off and see if we can forestall these increased temperatures, but it's also about a vast redistribution of wealth. The original proposal was that we would get an estimate of all the carbon dioxide that's being emitted every year, okay, by human sources. And then we would take the human population, divide that total amount of carbon dioxide by the human population, and you would come up with an average that each person is responsible for. How much carbon dioxide is an average human person responsible for? And therefore, based on that average figure, every country would be given a quota of carbon dioxide that they are allowed to emit based on their population. Now, Western countries, US, Europe, we're going to far exceed that. Smaller countries like Costa Rica, that gets most of its power from thermal energy, from volcanoes, they won't meet their quota. So what those who are exceeding their quota would have to do, they would have to buy what they called carbon credits from the countries that are far below that average in order to buy carbon credit for their overuse of overproduction of carbon dioxide. You weren't buying anything. You'd just be giving these countries money. Money for them to use however they choose. So that's what they meant by wealth redistribution. And it seems to still be a bit about that. Okay. More time, more often than not. Well, yeah, it gets siphoned off.
We'll never see it.
Yeah, a lot of U.S. foreign aid goes that direction.
Right.
Hard to get an accounting of all that kind of stuff. Okay. We're getting there. So, species extinction. Again, I said some predicted up to 20% of current species will go extinct in the next 100 years. Always be careful when they're telling you this is what we predict, because they don't really know. And they're basing their predictions on climate models that are based on computer models, okay? That if you take those computer models and you apply them to what we knew, say, in 1980, and plug all the data from 1980 in there, all those computer models vastly overshoot the temperature increase we've seen. They always over-predict increases in temperature. So when it's based on this kind of things, you can't really trust those predictions very well. Always be careful in a news article when you see a new study finds, or a new study suggests, or really large grain of salt. So large you would not be tempted to put it in your mouth, okay? And consume it. And again, most if not all, our current species have survived numerous global coolings and warmings over the last million years. If you want to look at a young Earth way, over the last 5,000 years, there have been warmings and coolings, and all the species we have survived those just fine. So they may move a little north, may move a little south, but ultimately the species, I think, are going to be just fine. Yeah, and part of that is just because we're crowding out their environment with their way of life. And for instance, it may be that in certain areas of rainforest, particularly the Amazon, that there may be certain types of species of certain small insects, whatever, that reside in maybe a square mile area, and that's the only place they're found. Well, if you tear down that square mile, that species disappears. It's human cause, but it has nothing to do with climate change. And they're generally more tolerant of heat than cold. We've heard a lot about deaths because of this heat wave in the West. And there were reports early on of the deaths that were caused by the deep freeze we had here back in February, but that's kind of died off. Humans can tolerate heat much more than they can severe cold. Cold always kills more people every year than heat ever does, usually by about twice as much. And so even as humans, we'll tolerate the heat better than we will cold. Same thing with most animals and plants. Rising sea levels. Sea levels have been rising for 10,000 years, risen 3 feet since Roman times, well before increase of carbon dioxide. And many glaciers are retreating, but some are growing. But many have retreated even further in the medieval warming. How do we know that? Because as some of these glaciers are retreating now, particularly the glaciers that are feeding Glacier Bay in Alaska, as they continue to retreat right now, they are exposing the leftovers of mature conifer forests that used to be growing there at one point before the glacier wiped it all out. And now it's retreating and it's exposing mature forest by the stumps and logs and all sorts of things. So we can tell that in the past, that area was much warmer than it is now. Because it takes decades upon decades for a mature forest to grow up when you're starting from bare soil. So, summary. I'm skeptical of the role of carbon dioxide levels in global warming. Additional carbon dioxide can be beneficial, as I've shown you. Too much faith in climate computer models and restrictions of fossil fuels more designed to regulate the economy than save the planet. So.
Do you think, in terms of carbon dioxide, do you think there's a legitimate issue of balance where we're cutting down too many trees with the population growing and there should be a balance there?
Well, but as I said, over even just the last 20 years, the Earth is greening by 6%. So we can monitor that through satellites. And so that's a fairly sound data point.
That it's 6% more green.
More green, yeah.
Like Detroit's becoming more farm.
So overall, there's 6% more plant life. Now, it's probably not forest that's growing, okay? Forests are still a bit under siege. Yeah, like I said, carbon dioxide is plant fertilizer.
So, why would you guess that they teach this to students? Why would you guess that they would tell students about carbon taxes and teach them about global warming and push it on them, even to a point of making them sign agreements that they'll be good carbon footprint stewards and stuff like that?
Well, they're drafting enlistees into their army. There will still need to be protests. People need to show up for protests. If you've been schooled in this way, and who are you as a high school student or a middle school student to question your science teachers? We've had struggles with this about the issue of evolution for decades now. Right.
But yet, they're going to push that onto a school full of children instead of the factory. Why are they teaching the children? What purpose does that serve?
Well, they're going to want that to be able to, as they become future voters, that they will have an influence over government policy in the long run that will put the factories on notice and will eventually be able to enact some of this into law. And so they're planning way ahead, but they've been doing it for a couple of decades now.
Right.
So,
and what has changed? I mean, our factories produce more carbon than they ever have.
Now they don't go to America, they go somewhere else in our jobs.
Well, sure. I mean, yeah, after we signed NAFTA, we realized the unfortunate events of that 20 years later. But,
well, look at the success of this teenager, Greta Thunberg, from Sweden. She has enlisted an army of children her age.
Are you being facetious?
No, not at all. Not at all. Because
success based on what?
Well, they've allowed her to speak to the UN. Okay? There's more and more pressure coming. Well, look at the Biden administration right now. They are looking to enact more issues concerning climate change than any other administration before them. Why? Because they think particularly young voters want this. This is what they want. That's the result of these policies in these schools over these last couple of decades.
Well, they're looking to. They haven't.
And they haven't.
In that pudding, which he has bigger fires to put out right now than...
Right. But at the same time, he knows that a lot of these younger Democratic voters in particular, this is what they really want to see happen. And if he doesn't begin to produce with that, he's going to have a tough road from within his own party.
Which every other president has before him.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, we still, there's a lot of people who still deem Bill Clinton as one of the best presidents in the last, you know, 40 years. But yet, his NAFTA agreement has basically decimated mm-hmm. how our lower to middle class people work in factories. I mean, we've ruined every factory because of the NAFTA agreement. So I'm skeptical when I see this being pushed to our students mm-hmm. and we get our students riled up for something that they don't have control over.
Yeah.
Because voting didn't change NAFTA. Voting didn't change the carbon footprints and why our tax dollars still go to it to pay, you know, Chile and you know, South American countries when that money doesn't even go to the people, and we can prove that. So, again, my question would go back to why are we doing this to students? Why are we pushing this so far on students when it's our problem? It's my problem as mm-hmm. an adult. It's my problem that I didn't vote for my local congressman who disagreed with the way this goes that way. And I mean, I get where you want mm-hmm. to invest in the future. I don't disagree with that. But it seems like a little too much, a little too late. And why keep students and children in fear for something that should be on you know, Ford and Verizon and, you know, Tesla and every other mm-hmm. country who's building these massive data centers and these massive
industries.
But
they're the future builders of, you know, if you wait, how long can you wait to educate?
Adults don't educate well.
Well, yeah, I concur with that statement 100%. Yeah. We do not educate very well at all. But it seems like we're putting this on them. I mean, I would almost postulate that it might be more just to keep them in fear.
Yeah, I think that's certainly a part of it.
Our climate.
Well, it is certainly a part of it, yeah. People who are in fear are more easily manipulated because they're afraid.
Right, sure.
So, in a sense, I'm agreeing with most of what you're saying. I'm not disagreeing, but I still think that the major effort on behalf of education and our children, again, is that they are future voters, and they hope to get more and more voters who will go along with these sorts of plans and ideas, that they eventually might be the workers of Ford and Tesla and might be able to institute change from within those companies.
Yeah. As parents of young children, I also have adult children, I have babies, what would you recommend, like how would I teach them as a parent, how would I steward them as you know, biblically based as well mm-hmm. as, you know, sure, I care about my environment as well, very much so. How would you recommend that we teach our kids? I don't want the school to teach my kids.
Yeah. Really good question. One of the first things I think, when you look at, I've been involved with the Texas State Board of Education concerning the evolution question for 20 years. I've served on committees that looked at guidelines and standards, what we have tried to do in that context is not try to introduce anything about creation or intelligent design. Simply, what we would say is teach more evolution so that they get a broader view that there's ups and downs to this. There's evidence that supports this and that, but there's evidence that doesn't. Okay, that's what has been our focus. And that's sort of the approach I think I would want to take. Our boys are 40 and 41 and 39, so not much we can do there.
You might have grandkids.
It doesn't look like that's going to happen.
Yeah, the earth's
been
too warm.
The 39-year-old has been married for how long?
15 years.
15 years, no kids. So, anyway.
Yeah, I'm 47 and I have babies. So.
It can happen. It can happen. Anyway, sometimes we have to be able to point out to them that everything you hear, you read in a science textbook isn't necessarily accurate. And sometimes there can be other information that they've just left out. They're not telling you. And with evolution, that's what we've tried to overcome. There's a lot of things our students are not being told. And there should be a broader perspective. And that might be the first place I would go. By the way, I wanted to let you know that there is a Christian organization that promotes creation care. It's called the Cornwall Alliance. And they have a great website. I donate to them every month. I'm one of their monthly donors. That means every book that they put out as a gift for a new donor, I get all the books. So, Cornwall Alliance. I have a stack about this tall of global warming skeptical books, some from a Christian perspective, some just science textbooks. And there's another group that sponsors a website called Climate Depot. And they continually run and give links to new articles that will promote climate skepticism. I'm not a climate skeptic anymore. I'm a climate denier, just like I'm an evolution denier. I can't be a skeptic anymore. You're just a denier of what's true. So,
what's the name of that second organization?
The website is just called Climate Depot. And they've put out two films, Climate Hustle 1, Climate Hustle, and Climate Hustle 2. Yeah, yeah. In the first one, they make a mockery of Al Gore and his film. That man sharing a Nobel Peace Prize was the biggest mistake that group has ever made. Because his film was fabricated, most of it. Either exaggerated or just outright fabricated. I think he did. Yeah. Anyway, just build in some healthy scientific skepticism. Not everything you're going to read in the science textbook is going to be fully accurate, and there will be things that they just left out. Sometimes intentionally, sometimes because they didn't know.
Just something you said tonight that just for me was a heads up is that the world has always had cycles of going up and going down. But the people who are, you know, I call them the chicken littles. It's always the sky is falling. They always point to it's going up, when there have been ups and downs. And we never hear that.
You've heard, for instance, I think that 3 of the last 5 years have been the warmest, sometimes they use hottest, on record. You know what the on record means, going back to thermometers, 1880s. That's the record they're talking about. So it's not a very long record, okay? And whenever the global average temperature is running about, how they even average this thing is questionable, honestly, runs about 54 or 55 degrees Fahrenheit. So if it goes up a tenth or two of a degree, it's not getting hotter. It's hard to even say it's warming, okay? So next time you're concerned.
I like the idea of, or when you think about cycles, God created, he designed cycles to the whole creation.
Yeah.
Tides and things like that that are just part of his creation.
Yeah.
And I think cycles are normal. And over long periods of time, they're going to be normal.
Yep.
Going back, you're talking about sunspots. I've heard something in relation to what cycles.
Okay.
It's creating more hectic flow.
Okay.
That's like maybe a precursor to the weird ice storm that we had and the weird hot pockets.
Okay.
But that may be like a qualifier to why we have this, but I don't know if you've heard that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Things can get a bit chaotic for a period of time.
But it's cyclical.
Yeah.
There's also the fear mongering of we're running out of oil, running out of resources. Is that also false? Like, or, I mean, or do you think there is, like you mentioned earlier about overusing things, like doing too much, and there should be a limit, a natural limit of how much we use. I can't remember, it was earlier in your thing, but do you think that we can overuse things to where we could run low on certain things, or do you think it, anyway, yeah.
Yeah, I think we can. I don't think we're running out of oil anytime soon. Mm-hmm. The other things, though, that we could get running low on are some of the rare earth metals that are needed to make the massive batteries for storing solar and wind power for when those sources just kind of go up and down, as they naturally will. The battery power that's going to be needed to create a grid that supposedly could run on just solar and wind is going to be enormous. The entire grid itself will have to be almost completely remade, because it cannot operate that way right now. One of the major reasons for some of the wildfires in California is because of their focus on creating more solar and wind power, putting their money into that, is that they haven't maintained the grid very well. And so that's why they have to have these local blackouts, because they can't risk the transmission lines starting a fire. Yeah.
Really aren't any.
Yeah.
There is an importance in having a Christian mindset,
yeah,
about the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think sometimes we get so fed up with hearing all of the negative,
yeah,
that we just say, no,
we just shut it off.
We just say, no, it's not there. It's like, we almost want to say it doesn't exist. Climate change, that's just all. The same thing has happened with the whole COVID thing. So you get sometimes so fed with hearing what you think, this just can't even be true, that you just want to,
yeah,
or at least, and sometimes they accuse us of just saying, well, you just think it's not a real thing.
Yeah.
COVID isn't a real thing. No, I didn't say that. But we have to find that balance.
That's always the hard part, finding the balance.
Yeah, you had COVID.
It takes effort. It takes effort to develop the balance.
Yes.
It takes a lot of work. And for the most part, most people are not willing to put in the work. I do have several articles on our PROBE website dealing with climate change, initially called global warming and then climate change. And so at probe.org, you can find several articles of mine there.
I have noticed generally, so I went to a private school in high school, and then I went to a public or, secular college, and noticed how when they teach science or history, I mean, science, obviously, they teach evolution and other things. But, like, even with government class, everything's liberal. Everything's pushed one direction. Even one lady that said that our founding fathers were all racist and, white male Christians, that everything was biased that way,
yeah,
and just kind of villainized, and so there's just kind of this general movement towards one direction,
mm-hmm,
right now for the last in education. I also had a thought on what he said about how we teach our children, and I think we should teach our, I don't have children, but teach them to how to think and not what to think.
Mm-hmm.
feel like a lot of public schools are teaching people what to think and how to think.
We do that at the teenage level, high school level. We teach a week-long camp every summer in June called Mind Games Camp, and it's for basically high school juniors and seniors, college students, maybe a few brighter freshmen, sophomores in high school can do it. But we're basically teaching them how to think. And Pro Ministries teaches us, yeah.
Mind games. It's been around.
We started doing it in 1994.
Yeah. So it's a school for like all ages?
It's a camp. No, okay. It's not a school.
I see.
It's a camp for upper level high school, college. We had a returning student this year who only just this year finished her freshman year in high school. So she came last year, and she did extremely well. So, in fact, her thank you note to me was our Christmas newsletter.
What got you into this? I missed the first part.
Well, even in high school, growing up in Chicago, I developed some sort of environmental awareness and concern about things. When I went to University of Illinois, although I was a zoology major, the sub major was animal ecology. So I've always been interested in ecology. So I've been interested in the environment for some time. As a believer in churches, I just never saw any activity around this question. None whatsoever. So when Francis Schaeffer came out with his book, Pollution and the Death of Man, A Christian View of Ecology, boy, I just ate it up. And the major part of the presentation was based on his book.
So the graph that you showed of that the medieval time, around
medieval warm period.
Is that an accurate graph?
Yeah. Well, at least the UN thinks so, and it supports our view.
Right.
Okay,
and
so
it shows to be hotter, or warmer.
Warmer. Careful with the hot thing.
Yeah, a warmer than we have now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we made it through that.
Oh yeah, we did.
Still here.
Like I said, that was the only reason they could colonize Greenland. You try to do that today, ain't gonna work.
The end of the world is already in his plan, mm-hmm. and in his promise, and in his,
I don't remember Revelation talking anything about Earth getting warm, as a sign of the times.
Yeah.
Carbon monoxide.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think God's worried about
it. Yeah. Oh, that's going to cause more global warming. That like
a,
yeah. God can do whatever he wants.
Yeah. So what else does, besides science, does Probe Ministry, like all kinds of apologetics or like...
Well, yeah, we do the basic apologetics about the overall existence of God, the reliability of the Bible as the Word of God, particularly the person of Christ, things on the resurrection. We do cover cultural issues. My wife says going to be here back in 2 months, talking about LGBTQ stuff. And the problem of evil, we've got articles on our website concerning that. Most of the articles on our website began as the transcripts from our radio program. We have a 5-day, 3-minute daily program that airs various places around the country. It's hard to find new stations for us anymore. and then most of the other half, she wrote. Answers to emails and online questions. We have how many answers to questions?
900.
So the rest of us staff have written a few, but she's written most of them. And so just about any question you can come up with, we've got an answer on our website.
Can we have that down somewhere?
Probe.org.
Pretty simple. Probe.org.
That's easy enough. Yeah.
Do you guys have a YouTube channel?
We do not, but we do have two different podcasts. One is the 5 days of our weekly radio program put into one, basically about 12-minute podcast. The other one is a conversational podcast, a conversation between staff members called Head and Heart, because we want to go beyond just the head to the so what. How do we love Jesus from the heart as well as integrating that. So that, we have about 2,000 resources on our website between articles, answers to email, podcasts and recorded messages. So we're coming up on 50 years of ministry. So we were doing worldview and apologetics before worldview and apologetics was cool. So
thank you very much.
No, you're welcome. All right.